This is APR, American Public Radio. I'm Connie Goldman, and this hour is called The Ageless Spirit. Many of the words you'll hear on this broadcast can be found in print in a book I co-authored entitled The Ageless Spirit, hence the title of this program. This hour of wit and wisdom is called The Ageless Spirit, a program about living life to the fullest in the later years. This is actress Jessica Tandy and husband actor Hume Cronin.
I don't want to end up with a smooth face.
You're not going to.
I haven't. I mean, the lines, the wrinkles, let them get deeper. I mean, they, particularly the laugh lines. I mean, that's not only what gives life its savor, but which charges the battery.
The Ageless Spirit is a tapestry of comments and stories from conversations I've recorded with several well-known personalities, all in their mature years. Some observations are short vignettes, others brief snapshots of personal reflections that capture the moment.
I don't think there's such a thing as feeling old.
Ever so many people say that. Even if they are old crocks, they will say, "I don't feel old."
Whoever thinks they're going to get old, got married at 22 and 24, you're going to live forever.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see an old man.
I'm very, very alive.
It gets better every year. That's the way life is.
Live your life and forget your age.
Anything that has care and is kept up becomes a classic. Now that applies to cars and to people. You can become a classic.
You may have recognized some of those voices. If not, you'll surely recognize many of the names of those who will share their insights and personal views. Jason Robards, Pete Seeger, Artie Shaw, Beatrice Wood, Hugh Downs, Phyllis Diller, Stanley Kunitz, Ozzie Davis, Eddie Albert, Art Linkletter, and others as well. When I recorded the original interviews, we didn't talk much about fame or professional accomplishments, nor did we indulge in the latest gossip that often surrounds such celebrities. What made our conversations unique, I believe, was a focus exclusively on the subject of aging. Their view of life from the perspective of being in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. You may have imagined that celebrities, stars, public personalities are different from the rest of us. But, as you'll discover, the dignity and integrity of their encounter with aging is our own as well.
The thing you need more than anything else when you get old is courage. You are going to go through things where you have to become much more flexible, you have to be willing to change, you have to face painful crises, and courage is really absolutely the most essential part of it.
Elders need a certain amount of discomfort. They need irritation, okay? They need to be indignant about things. My God, if you can't be indignant, you aren't anything.
We really don't have much time to waste.
You don't have to worry about the future. And therefore, you take each day. I take each hour for the pleasure it brings.
You got to keep active to keep alive. I just truly believe that. And I'm more active now than I was at a younger age, because I have more to be active about.
If you don't continue to exercise, the muscles atrophy. And I'm not just speaking of muscles. I'm speaking of what goes on between the ears and your general enthusiasm for life. Keep swinging.
One of life's adventures, if you're lucky enough to hang around, is growing older. Yes, in reality, of course we start aging the day we're born. But growing old? Somehow, when we're young, we just can't visualize ourselves looking wrinkled or gray-haired or bald, or seeing ourselves in the mirror looking more like we remember our grandparents than resembling our own high school graduation photos.
There's no question that the outside of an individual does change, and wither and wrinkle, but very curiously, the inside does not change.
That was ceramic artist Beatrice Wood, now 101 years old, incidentally, with her comments on that strange discrepancy between how we look on the outside and how we might feel on the inside.
The essence of a human being, the soul, whatever it is called, actually never ages. It's only the outer covering of an individual that ages.
Despite the pacemaker and the pill taking and the many visits for checkups to the doctors, I don't feel old.
That's the voice of 86-year-old Julius Epstein, writer of the classic film Casablanca, as well as over 50 other screenplays.
Well, I used to jog 6 miles, so I'm doing 4 miles now. That isn't too bad. There are physical manifestations. My hearing isn't what it should be. I'm considering a hearing aid, glasses, little things like that are the only manifestations to me of growing old. I don't think or any of my friends, my cronies, I don't think there's anything old fogey about us. But I never said to myself, one day I'm old. How can you say one day you're young and the next day you're old?
Television host and commentator Hugh Downs, now in his mid-70s.
If I'm walking down the street, I'm a 35-year-old walking down the street, and I really think that people look at me that way. And then I see myself in a store window, I say, God, I don't look 35. And it's always a surprise. It's not painful, but it's just kind of amusing because it's surprising to see this older man looking back at me.
Radio and television personality, author and lecturer, Art Linkletter.
Growing old is one of the most surprising things that happens to everybody. I didn't give it any thought, as most people don't, because I was healthy, I was well, I was happy, things were going along swimmingly, I was busily occupied with a career and a family, and all of a sudden I discovered one day that I had gotten old. In a family way, you begin to realize you're old when your children become grandparents. That is a real reminder. When my son Jack became a grandfather, and I still thought of him as a little boy, basically, I realized that time had passed.
Mary Catherine Bateson is a scholar and writer. She shares a story about her mother, the prestigious anthropologist Margaret Mead.
I have a memory that when my mother began to get gray hair, she was looking quite specially beautiful. It was a good time in her life, and she didn't disguise it. And I remember thinking how pretty my mommy looks. And so that when I began to get gray hair, I looked in the mirror and I thought, grow it yourself, silver jewelry. And felt, I'm going to look as pretty as I remember my mother looking. And to realize what a gift she had given me by not having disguised her own aging. I'm immensely fortunate to have had that. And many people didn't have that. Many people had parents who, as they aged, didn't have anything good to say or project about the process.
Actor Jason Robards tells of the confusion he encountered when it came down to defining who's old.
I'll tell you something. I went on a train last year, to New York. Instead of driving down, I said, I'm going to get on a train. And I really looked like $1 million. I had to go in to do something, and I had a blue suit, vest, tie. I really looked good. Hat, snap, rim, hat. I got on a train, and I just went to pay my regular fare, and the conductor came down, and he punched the thing, and he said, that'll be $3. $3. I said, really? Yeah. He said, here. I said, all right. I mean, I know the guy was a fool. And I looked on the ticket. He punched senior citizen disabled. Disabled. I said, I've never looked so good. And he just punched me up, senior citizen disabled. So when I got to Grand Central, I said, you know something? I'm going over and buy a ticket for the way back. I'll buy my ticket now because I won't have to buy it tonight when I go home. I bought a ticket, and I said, I want a senior citizen ticket. I didn't say disabled because I was walking. And the guy says, let me see your driver's license. He didn't believe me, so I had to pull out my driver's license and that card that they give you at 65 with a red, white, and blue on it, and he begrudgingly gave me a $3 ticket. So, you see, the conductor and the clerk at the Grand Central had a completely different opinion of me. Actually, I was quite proud to have to bring out the license and the card for old age.
There seems to be a good deal of bewilderment about this subject of aging. When does a person reach the status of being old? Maybe it's time for each of us to examine some outdated assumptions about aging. In reality, the graying of America is upon us. There are currently over 65 million people in our country age 50 and beyond, and every 6 seconds someone celebrates or agitates over the candles on their mid-century birthday cake. There are some negative and very confusing attitudes out there about aging. Mary Catherine Bateson and Hugh Downs comment.
There's still rampant in our country the prejudice of believing that older people are not useful, that they're not as intelligent, that they don't have the same needs, and in some cases where the prejudice is very high, that they aren't quite as human as other people. A terrible mistake for people to make, I think. It's a type of prejudice that bounces back, because with luck, it's a minority that we all join.
One of the problems that we have as Americans, and maybe women even more than men, is that we have been being told all our lives that we don't conform to some ideal type. I remember reading 17 magazine when I was 17 and knowing I didn't look like that. And it took quite a few years before I learned to look around and realize that my peers didn't look like that either, and indeed that the people I thought were beautiful didn't look like that. We're at risk of the same kind of process in thinking about aging. On the one hand, there is an old stereotype which says that no woman is attractive over, what, 30? Terrible. So there are those stereotypes that simply don't recognize the beauties of aging. And then there's the risk of developing another set of stereotypes of what I call super elder, people who are chronologically into their 60s or 70s. But boy, you wouldn't know it. And they've just climbed Mount Everest. And I look at some of these magazines and I think to myself, uh-oh, here we go again with 17. Somebody's telling me how I should look and how I should behave, and not only can I not do that, but it isn't me. It isn't my way of being beautiful or productive or vital.
The older a person is, the more of a monument that person is to what's worthwhile in life, because all the forces that try to pull us down and destroy us in our cribs and when through our childhood and through our midlife and everything, if you survive that and if you go into old age, then you are the opposite of decrepitude and impairment, because you have, and the longer you live, the more you're the opposite. And we still tend to put age in the same basket as decrepitude and impairment, which is not only unfair, but it's kind of silly.
Remember actress Faye Ray, the young damsel in the hand of the original King Kong? Well, she's in her 80s now, a grand and wise lady. Here's a short piece of my conversation with her.
I would say that 90% of people who do grow old think that is a tragedy, and it just enhances their problems.
Well, you know, in other cultures, There's a reverence for age.
Yes.
A friend of mine told me that he was in a foreign country where somebody said, "I haven't seen you for so long, and you look so old. You've got all that gray hair."
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, "Oh, gosh." I mean, that was his internal response. And then he realized, he listened to the tone of voice, and it was with great excitement.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're finally one of the elders.
You're right. I knew a great commentator whose I had a lot of respect for, and I think everybody did, but I know that people around him were warning him that now he was getting older, and now he was going to have to compete with younger minds. Now he might have to get a toupee. Now he might have to make all those moves that indicate that youth is what counts. That I did not like to hear, because the older he got, the more wisdom I could get from him.
But maybe things are beginning to change, says Mary Catherine Bateson.
If we're fortunate, we can expect levels of health and energy that make those years a rather different experience than they have been for previous generations. So that we're discovering, in a real sense, new stages of life that weren't available to so many people in the past.
So how do we learn to be an elder? Writer and pioneer radio drama producer Norman Corwin offers his thoughts.
You reach instinctively for those models of successful, and almost always in a creative sense, successful old age. Verdi, you think of. You think of Shaw, who lived to write well into his old age. And Michelangelo, who lived to a good age. And you hold those up as models.
Certainly those distinguished and esteemed individuals who created masterpieces in their late years are historical role models for some. But to grow to maturity in the 1990s, it seems we might benefit more from the wisdom of our contemporaries. Rollo May.
I find the one thing that age does to me, it doesn't dampen my enthusiasm, it doesn't dampen my possibilities, it just makes them slower. You have to accept your own personality, your own difficulties, your own problems. But once you do, then it's as though everything moves.
M.F.K. Fisher.
I hoard moments of being by myself and kind of charging my batteries. I think you're more aware of that as you get older. You really have to charge them a bit, deliberately, instead of just counting on unlimited electrical energy, unlimited whatever it is. I like to be alone, but I'm never lonely.
William Manchester.
I see fewer people. I read fewer books. But the books I do read are very challenging. The work that I do, I think, has more dimensions like that.
Phyllis Diller.
You aren't as impatient as you were as a child. You don't throw an acorn in the ground and say, where's my tree? And you do gain wisdom, and you hopefully have worked out a way to live happily.
Ozzie Davis.
I would say life comes a lot easier if you maintain your sense of humor. I believe that humor is divine. I think it's one of God's greatest gifts to us. It enables us to put things into perspective and to understand that we are very large and we're also very small.
Mary Catherine Bateson.
As you live with yourself for more years, perhaps become in some ways more transparent to yourself. Getting to know oneself better so that the interior life becomes more companionable. Also so that you make allowances for yourself.
Ida LeSean.
I think the thing about old age is that for the first time you have a chance to have an inner life. If you're raising children and you're running around and you have PTA meetings and you're working and everything else, there's very little time for inner life.
Rollo May.
I think creativity is the answer to aging. And by creativity, I don't mean doing something that everybody's going to say, oh, how wonderful. But by creativity, I mean rather listening to one's own inner voice, to one's own ideas, one's own inspirations. The later years ought to be a time when you enjoy the creativity that you have. It's a great pity if people simply cut off their activity.
Hugh Downs.
In our youth-oriented Pepsi generation mentality, people say, well, I'd like to have, what I'd like to have is the wisdom I now have, but I'd like to be in a 20-year-old body. I think that's an anomaly because, first of all, to be 20, you would have to have the whole ball game, you know, the ignorance, the uncertainty, so that once you've made it to a certain point, you're not uneasy about all those years that you've had because you've had them and nothing's going to take that away.
Art Linkletter.
We can do the best we can, and an attitude is generally derived from self-esteem, and self-esteem comes from a recognition that you have done the best you can with what you have. Not that you're richer or more powerful or more famous than anybody or even the people you know, but that you did with what God gave you and what life gave you the best you could, and you look at the good things that have happened to you, and there have been good and bad for everybody.
Frances Lear.
I think you waste less time as you get older, yes. I remember quite vividly when I turned 60, and I said to myself, this is the moment when one starts looking ahead and counting. Now I see the time ahead of me and what I would like to accomplish in that time. And I think that's why we become more focused.
Stanley Kunitz.
With age comes a diminishing of barriers. One can take greater risks at a certain point because you've tested yourself time and time before. You know what you can do. You know better than anyone else. And who's to stop you from daring to do something that is not expected from you?
Frances Lear.
Whatever in you is negative or dark, fight it and turn it around and make it positive.
Art Linkletter.
As the great song once said many years ago, emphasize the positive and eliminate the negative.
Phyllis Diller.
I am absolutely certain that being happy is what keeps you young. You have to find out what makes you happy and just hope that it's legal.
Mary Catherine Bateson.
I have a suspicion that the people who are best prepared for the aging process are the people who sometime in their 40s or 50s stop before they feel they're in a major midlife crisis, before they feel as if they're trapped. Stop, take a breath, begin something new, take a long trip somewhere, long, thoughtful vacation, go back to school and learn a new skill. The best students in my classes are over 50, I have to tell you. And then they will have said to themselves, I have not committed myself to one adult role that I will hang on to with teeth and nails until I despair of doing so. They will have said to themselves that they are growing, changing, learning beings. And I live in a time of beginnings as well as endings.
Sometimes wisdom and insight come when we least anticipate it and from unexpected sources. While working on a book she was writing on the subject of middle age, Ida LaShawn, an educator, family counselor, and author, learned a life lesson at a dinner party.
And I was sitting next to a man who was an oceanographer at Woods Hole. And I thought to myself, oh my God, what am I going to talk to him about? I know nothing about what's under the sea. But I asked him a few questions and got very interested, and he obviously loved to talk about his work. And at one point in the conversation, he said, did you ever think about the fact that there are 2-pound lobsters and there are 3-pound lobsters and there are 12-pound lobsters and 6 and so on? So he said this, and I said, I'm sorry, but it really has never been very high on my list of priorities to wonder about that. And he said, well, I'm going to explain it to you. He said, lobsters know when they have to deshell, that they get real crowded inside this 3-pound shell, and they're terribly uncomfortable, you know, whatever they feel, I don't know. But it's not possible to go on living. They'll die if they stay in that shell. So what they do is they go out to the sea, which is very dangerous. They might get hit by a reef. They might be eaten by another lobster or a fish, but they de-shell. That whole hard shell comes off. And that pink membrane that's inside grows and becomes a harder shell, but a bigger one. And I was so preoccupied with this, and I kept thinking about it, and I thought, that's the most interesting thing, and I couldn't forget it. I dreamt about it. Finally, I mentioned it to my therapist, and she said, Ida, that's what you're writing this book about, going to the reef, even if it's dangerous. And that really has been my philosophy of life at any age, and it certainly is now, that you take what, you know, if you stay stifled where you are, it's just, you know, you're dead before you're dead.
A reminder that our challenge is to remain open, flexible, and believing that continued growth is not only possible in our later years, but imperative.
Learning is an ongoing process. It doesn't happen in school. Unless you want to call the school of life a school, then it happens all the time.
I enjoy things in a way I never did before.
Sensations of living are more vivid now than they were.
I find my life is becoming narrower and narrower, but deeper and deeper.
I think what has happened with aging is I've grown more tolerant of differences.
I find that I am acting kinder and more forgiving to people and not condemning.
I finally arrived at a point where I realized that you don't have to hate anybody.
What has come upon me is a very slight degree of tranquility. So I think age, for me, tends to make me a little more humble.
I'm not as self-centered as I used to be.
I'm always, always, always able to be in awe. I'm always able to have a sense of wonder.
I learned, finally, that the whole idea of piling up more on top of more is a rather fruitless occupation.
Things sort of simplify.
Simplicity is an objective that you must woo, that you must continually use as a guideline.
I find this age absolutely treasurable.
I think the main thing that is to be cherished in growing old is dignity.
I have changed. I've gotten lines. And sometimes I pull back and think, oh, gee, that would, when I pull my face back, oh, that would be a kind of a bland face. I wouldn't really want that. I like my lines.
I'm more strongly in touch with the realities, much more deeply in touch with the unrealities. They're more vivid.
You adjust your expectations. You know what you're good at. And you don't waste your time trying to do the things you're not good at.
I never saw myself as an older woman until I became an older woman. I was terribly unhappy 30 years ago. My life changed dramatically, totally, profoundly, when I was 60. I became free.
This is the best time of my life, you know. It took me a long time, you know. It's just a better time, I think, because now is the payoff, the icing on the cake.
And I find that on a platform before an audience at 90 years of age, I can be just as alive as I was at 40.
A person who grows old has experience.
This is the happiest time of my life. And I would say that if one has health, it's really wonderful to grow old.
It's to be hoped that as we go older, we mature. Well, you mean you become this peculiar thing called an octogenarian, but all you have to do that is hang around.
I am as curious as I ever was. I have as much work to do every day, even more. I can't wait for the day to begin and get going. It's very important to me.
The only thing I care about, really, is learning and sensing and being part of the world I live in, seeing it and observing it and marveling at it.
If you don't have wisdom and some real know-how by the time you get to be in the 70s and 80s and 90s and 100s, boy, it's been a loss.
I think everybody over 75 should have an honorary doctorate degree in life.
one of the wonderful things that my husband gave me was a line that said to me, he was younger than I, but he always said, there are the aged and the ageless. And you, he said, are ageless. Wasn't that a gift? Wasn't that a beautiful thing to say?
That's something we could all say to ourselves. I do not feel any age. There is no age to the spirit. Age itself is no barrier to creativity and maintaining a positive attitude towards the future. In fact, there's much to say in praise of age. Yet, aging with maturity, grace, and wisdom doesn't eliminate the reality of increased vulnerability to illness and frailty, diminished energy, and as Shakespeare put it, the heartaches and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. Norman Corwin, Catherine Koo, and Hume Cronin.
I have fears and anxieties. They turn in me into a form of anger about growing older. I don't see as well. I only have one eye, but that's not, even if I had two, I just simply don't see as well. I don't hear as well. It infuriates me that I can't do the physical things I used to do 25 years ago. You know, there come days in your life when you say, I know that tooth is going to come. I have to come out. I've got to get my glasses strengthened. I've got to have another prescription. Why does my back hurt all the time? God damn it, I'm getting older.
The worst thing about growing old is the erosion, is the failing sight, the failing.
My mind constantly outstrips my body. My body is not worth 2 cents. In fact, if I could just take the whole darn thing, toss it out of the window and just keep this part and my eyes, I think I'd be very happy. But the fact that I have to live with this exhausted, worn out, old rag of a mechanism is very difficult. I think the first and most important advantage is that you're not anymore, at least as I used to be, terrified of dying, as most people are, whether they admit it or not.
So much of our lives revolve around the mystery, apprehension, and fear of death. We go to great lengths to ensure our survival. We look for ways to retard the aging process and prolong life. Nevertheless, each of us will experience, in some form, personal loss during our lifetime. And each of us will, ultimately, experience our own death. It's an unalterable reality of life. Yet facing that reality, in whatever personal way works for an individual, can remove that burden of fear and seems to be the key for seeing life's transitions as a quest, not a crisis. Thoughts on this subject from Art Linkletter, Ida LaShawn, Artie Shaw, Stanley Kunitz, Mary Catherine Bateson, Rollo May, Norman Corwin, Catherine Koo, and Jason Robarts.
We all got to check in and we all got to check out. It's like going to a hotel, I guess. It's not a permanent place, this earth.
I can't bear the idea of not being here forever. Unthinkable not to be.
There's no question you got to go. That's the one undeniable fact.
There's a time for everything, and there's a time to go, too. There's perhaps a greater acceptance of the whole phenomenon of dying as well as of living, as being part of the whole wheel of nature.
Death is intrinsic to the life process. No one who cannot acknowledge their own death can be in sympathy with nature in the broadest sense. Once you say, I refuse to acknowledge that I'm going to die, you are at war with nature.
There are a pile of microbes out there plotting. We'll get them. Let's invade them. We'll give them this cockeye or that cockeye, Jonococci or Elococci or whatever. I'm just going to go along as I am. I have no other plans. What is it to do? So you say to yourself, I've learned all this stuff, and I'm going to die like that idiot down the street. And I'll be just as dead as he is. So I can't believe that's the one question, that's the one point I cannot get my mind around. I can't make myself believe there is no purpose. And I ask myself all the time, why are you bothering? Why? Because something in me makes me. Whatever that is as close to a definition of what soul, all those words people use, the psyche, whatever that is, that's there. And I can't argue it because it's operating. And as long as that keeps operating, I have to believe there's some reason.
Now, the fact that we all die and time catches up with us all, the acceptance of that destiny is an essential part of our capacity to create. And you realize that that you will die, and dying is not such a terrible thing. As a matter of fact, I would hate to be immortal. One good lifetime is enough.
If one has lived not wastefully, if one can look back and say, well, I had a good time. Well, I pulled my weight. When you pass 70 and you begin to look at those numbers, then you realize that it could happen any day, really. And the dread, which I think we all have and suppress, of extinction, seems to be more accommodated.
In one's age, death itself becomes implicit in your voice. It becomes your theme in an intimate way. And so you're exploring new territory. And there is that that close embrace between your life and your death that you never had before.
Now, I don't happen to have any religious faith at all. I don't know why, but I envy people who do. I wish I had, but I don't. So therefore, I believe that your life is the one thing you're given. And I think, therefore, you just have to grab it, enjoy it. It's the one, it's your gift, and use it.
Art Linkletter.
We were confronted with the death of my daughter, which was probably a watershed in my life, and where a beautiful 19-year-old girl took her own life, which is the saddest and the most dramatic and really the most unacceptable thing that can happen to a human being, to have your own child take her life or his life. And at that point, the family rallied around me, and I had to be strong. And a few years later, my 32-year-old second son, Robert, was killed in a tragic automobile accident. And once again, the family rallied around, and I had to be the one who tried to make sense out of this terrible loss. And in struggling to do this, my life changed. And I began, as a matter of fact, a new career as a lecturer, but also I began a new career as an advisor and a counselor to many, many people who were undergoing unbearable tragedies. I find that my mail, my personal contacts, from that moment on, have been filled with people who are losing something in life, and they come to me as someone that they know has been through it. I'll never leave you the same. You're either going to be diminished or you're going to be enhanced by facing up to tremendous tragedy or tremendous problems. And it's up to you as to which is going to happen. Too many people who lose others, mothers, fathers, children, friends, become people who use this grief as a tent pole for their life. They cherish it almost. They clutch it to them. They never let it go. And that grief becomes the impelling force for a negative, bitter, unhappy, vengeful, unforgiving life. And other people, like myself, I think, I know, use it as a springboard for being a better person and for enjoying life more and for appreciating life and all the good things in it.
As experiences, both tragic and joyous, come into our lives, the challenge each of us face is to grow in our vision and compassion as we age. Actor Ossie Davis.
I know that there is the material aspect of living and life that must be attended to. But I know that the materials of the world cannot set the values by which the world must live. Age is that point of elevation from which it is easier to see who you are, what it is you want to do, and find yourself closer to the very center of the universe, having lived through many changes, through many years, having seen many public passions rise and fall, gives you a sense of continuity. And it's continuity that not only is a part of your own view, but that continuity also attaches itself to the continuity of time altogether. So I can look back and see way back, but somehow that enables me to look forward and see way forward. Age makes knowledge, tempers knowledge with experience, and out of that comes the possibilities of wisdom.
Yes, age and experience open the door to the possibility of wisdom, but old does not necessarily mean wise. We strive to understand what is true and lasting, to cultivate insight, authenticity, common sense, sensitivity. We contemplate the big questions, looking for profound truths. Yet sometimes wisdom, peace, a deeper spiritual connection is to be found in small experiences, simple acts, ordinary events that touch the life of the spirit. Creator of Peanuts, Charles Schulz.
I just want to stay home with my dog. I don't feel that I have to be reading something or writing something or being continually active. I do have many evenings where I can go home and just do nothing. I just sit in my big chair and I have my little TV clicker and I run up and down the channels and shoot from one thing to another, and my dog jumps up on the hassock in front of me and asks for another cookie, and I give it to him, and he jumps down, and I click from one program to another. Then he jumps up in the hassock and he wants another cookie, and I give him another doggy cookie, and he jumps down again, and that's our life. Pretty soon I know it's 9:30 and it's time to go to bed. I'm great for doing nothing. It's almost something that has to be learned. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think that learning to just hang around is all right.
Author, educator, Ida LaShawn.
I didn't ever understand or appreciate solitude till maybe 20 or 30 years ago as I got middle-aged. And I then found that being away in the country, one of my favorite forms of meditation is feeding ducks. I had about 30 ducks who came to me every day and became my friends. They walked into the house if the door was open. And enormous interest in birds and enormous interest in plants and flowers and sunsets and the universe and everything in it.
Actor Eddie Albert.
I walk every morning, and I hear at about 4:30 in the morning, I walk for about an hour, and it's quiet, and thinking about these things and looking at the trees and the stars and the whole universe, and it's quiet at that time, no cars, so you can improve on your ability to soak that up in your bones.
Poet Stanley Kunitz.
I loved and still love the sense of growing things, the marvelous returns of one's labor, and the beauty of what grows. It's to me so thrilling that I can hardly wait each morning to see what's happened during the night. It's terribly important to me.
Folk singer Pete Seeger.
I look upon God as everything. Now, some people say, oh, God is in everything. Oh, well, that's our difference of opinion. If I was able to look through an electron microscope, see something 1/1,000,000th of an inch in size, they'd say, well, that's God's handiwork. I say that is God.
Writer of prose and poetry, the late Eve Merriam.
I guess maybe when I hit 60, that was a very strong benchmark. Because I think until then, one can sort of persuade oneself that one is in late middle age. And then you get to a point you say, woo, I'm in my seventh decade. And while I think I've always had a certain amount of daily joy, I find even more so now that the sight of a clear sky in New York, which doesn't come all that often, or being out in the country, or right now in the spring, in April, where the trees are just the greenest they've ever been, and even the colors that people wear, I feel the senses become heightened. I know that some scientists think that our senses become dimmed with age, but I think it's just the reverse. A love for the ordinary is what is most important as one ages. Not for the extraordinary. There are always trips to Bali or Yokohama or Paris, but to get the joy out of dailiness, that's what struck me when I hit my 60s. I thought, good heavens, I am getting so much pleasure out of my breakfast. I thought to myself, I didn't know grapefruit juice could taste so good. And the cereal seemed to me that I just had the right amount of milk in it, and the coffee tasted so good. And I thought, this is really amazing. And it's as though some kind of slight film over the world has been stripped away, and there is now a clarity that one didn't have before.
Actor Ozzie Davis.
I learned a lesson a long time ago, and the lesson is the way to make a man rich is to decrease his wants. I learn, and I learn more and more every day, what not to want and how not to want it. That, to me, is the regimen of the spirit.
Ceramic artist Beatrice Wood.
I love getting in bed at night under an electric blanket. On a cold day, I love getting into a hot tub. At night, before I go to bed, I take graham crackers and milk, and I love it. And I love always looking at the mountains. And I think these are my greatest pleasures.
There's honesty and humility in these words, and to my way of thinking, real wisdom. Strangely, the simplifying of life's activities offers the opportunity to connect both with a deeper self and what some call a higher power. As we seek the spiritual, we must continue to grow and explore, to learn and unlearn. Mary Catherine Bateson.
I wonder often what it is that people mean when they say spiritual. What it is coming to mean to me is a changed quality of attention, both inward and outward, listening, looking, tasting, meditating. Learning is a form of spirituality. It is an opening of yourself to new information, organization, ideas. These are not material things. And beyond that, learning involves something that is often recognized as intrinsic to spirituality. Learning requires a degree of humility. You have to know that you don't know in order to learn something new. You have to know that you don't know as you walk through the woods in order to see something new around you. And oddly, you have to know that you don't know just when you're quiet and alone by yourself, to let some new recognition grow within you. Now, that's not at all a usual definition of spirituality, and yet it seems to me, once you say that, that learning is a spirituality, that's a tremendously powerful connection to make. That simply to be willing to learn is to go into a sacred space. And to go into it, you know, with take your shoes off before you go in.
There are many paths that connect us with other human beings, and there are similar paths that connect us more fully with ourselves. The road is called love, says actor Eddie Albert.
Sir James Jeans said one time, "The same energy that holds the galaxies in their orbits is the energy that mankind calls love." Yes, Teilhard de Chardin, the Jesuit in France, he said, "Someday, after man has tamed all these energies, the tides, the winds, gravity, and so forth, he will turn his mind toward the study of the energy of love. And for the second time in man's history, he will have discovered fire."
When people are loving, brave, truthful, charitable, God is present, says Rabbi Harold Kushner. One last story on learning life's lessons. Beatrice Wood.
My life is just full of mistakes, and they're like pebbles that make a good road. We meet people with walls, and I think it's important to meet people without walls. Now, I was ill and had to be in the hospital for 3 days, mostly to rest. All right, I found myself with an old hag, I think more or less toothless, with an accent. Now, I needed sleep, so I went to sleep. And this poor creature chatted, and I was mad. The next day, when I had a little rest, I said to myself, "I'm not nice to this poor woman. She needs somebody to talk to. I must be more decent to her." So when afternoon came, I got off my high horse and listened to her. And she'd had a heart attack. She was all alone, frightened to death, and in a state of crisis. I saw this. I listened to her. The next day I was leaving, and I'd whipped myself into kind of decency. So I sat on her bed, and I talked to her. And I said, "Look, I will speak to the doctor about you. When I leave, I will phone you every day." And that meant something to her, so I left. The next morning, I phoned and talked. I said, "I'll phone you tomorrow. Don't worry, I'll keep in touch with you," because she felt absolutely bereft and alone. The day after that, I went to Ventura, and coming back, I was terribly tired, and I said to myself, "I must go see that old woman." I didn't want to, but I went. I sat on her bed, and she appreciated that I, a stranger, was befriending her. I sat on my bed, I took her hand, I looked at her, and this ugly old woman, to my astonishment, was beautiful. There was no wall between us. It was a wonderful experience for me. You see, we're all really one, and that oneness between us, I touched. And when I left, I said goodbye, and the next morning I phoned, and they said, "You can't reach her. She died during the night." And it was so wonderful for me, because I was sure she died knowing somebody cared. Now, you see, the arrogance of the artist who did not want to be disturbed, I threw that into the ash can and, without a wall, met another human being. And that ugly human being became beautiful. And this is one of the most important experiences and lessons of my life.
This business of living, of moving through the world with vitality and zest and humor and joy, is mostly about courage. The courage to look at your life with honesty and to take the necessary steps at any age, on any stage, to embrace and brighten the world around you. We're here, cradled mysteriously between time and eternity. And yes, much of our destiny is beyond our control, capricious, vexing, and baffling. Yet much of it is not. We do have choice. And it is in this arena that the quest for a deeply rewarding later life can be made. Thank you. How can we sum up the wisdom of these many ageless spirits? Whose words can give us a parting message to take with us as we embrace our own aging? I've entrusted this mission to Artie Shaw, now in his mid-80s and going strong.
There are only three questions, and here they are. Who are we? Where do we come from? Where are we going? And those are all I've got the time to try to find out the answers to. I think that's all it's about. We're here to search. We pass this way but once, so pay attention.
In sharing the private thoughts of public figures, we come to discover their concerns and feelings are nothing less than a mirror for our own experience of all that it can mean to grow old, to see aging as a quest, not a crisis, a time to grow and learn and live life to the fullest, to discover our ageless spirits. I'm Connie Goldman, host and creator of The Ageless Spirit. Eileen Sageloff was the associate producer. I extend my appreciation to her for her hard work and valuable insights. Thanks also to public radio stations KCRW and KUSC for the use of their production facilities.